You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
Good morning, everyone. There we are. Okay, good. Thank you, Michael. Firstly, I just want to thank you all for coming this morning, and I want to thank the dean as well as Gil for their kind invitation to have us come this morning to talk about our recent trip to England. Before we start, and I have this wonderful backdrop of St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle, where we ended our tour, before we get into all of the details, I wanted to just mention just a little bit of the why. Why do we do these trips? And I'm so grateful that I'm accompanied today by several members of the choir here, but two who will talk a little bit about their own experiences from their own perspective. We have Holly Higginbotham and David Fleming. Before you guys start talking, I would love for you to share when it's your time to speak, how long you've been in the choir and your history here. I think that would be good context for everyone, and also a testament to the longevity of choir members who, when they come, they stay, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I first want to speak to the why, because you might think, why do you go on these tours? They could, on the outside, have the perception of being an elaborate field trip. And a very expensive one at that, but they are nothing of the sort. I can assure you. You can ask any of the choir members here that it is extremely hard work, not only in preparation to go, but while we're there as well. And it really is an amazing experience for the choir on so many levels. First and foremost, the choirs in the UK have very busy schedules, and they take a two-month break in July and resume in September. And they, in spite of having these breaks, their choral ministry continues. And so they invite visiting choirs, either from England or from the United States or from all around the world, to come and travel to the United Kingdom and bring their own ministry to their venue, to their house of worship. And so we actually help continue these places' ministries as we sing through the week. It's not just a showcase. We are actually enabling them to carry on their choral ministry, primarily through the service of choral evensong. So one of the things I've tried to do in our music ministry is to not only highlight and preserve, but continue and educate in the what is called the Anglican choral tradition. So our church, being born of the Church of England, well, it makes good sense that the music that we sing in the church is also largely born of the Church of England. Now, we do sing a lot of music, as you know. Not all of it is English, right? Just a lot of it is continental European, a lot of American music, and a lot of old and very new music. So I do try to vary the music that you hear in the services. And of course, the thing that always is the arbiter of what we sing is the text. And if the music is not serving the text, then we're doing this for naught. So the first thing is we help these other places in the Anglican choral tradition continue their ministry. It also becomes an extension of our own ministry. We get to proclaim the gospel in a foreign place to us, and really help them grow. And I think one thing the choir can attest to is that in all of our experiences, it is very clear that these folks are not just doing church. Again, can very much be a part of the perception, especially at a place like Windsor, especially at a place like St. Paul's Cathedral, London, where we were 4 years ago, because these places are very touristy because of their history and they're flocked with tourists every single day. And one of the sad things about these places is that they depend on tourist money to stay open, because the Church of England isn't in the greatest shape, as you all know, in terms of attendance. Though I did read a recent statistic that over the last 2 years, church attendance is growing in the UK. So that is a praise. But I think that the choir can attest to the fact that when we visit these places, they take this very seriously, extremely seriously. And it is clear that they are in a praying, worshipful environment. It is not just a stage, if you will. So doing very much the same work that we're doing here in many respects. We, the choir, also grow quite a bit on these tours. We work very hard to prepare for them, but there isn't anything that can really replace the practice of daily singing. The choirs that sing every day are really the choirs that can do this. And there's no doubt our choir can sing every day, and they do on these tours. Sometimes I both miss and give thanks for the fact that we don't do daily services. especially with a two-year-old running around. But in any event, I do miss it in many regards, but it is nice to not have to do every day. But we really do grow as a group when you sing together every day, especially the Psalms. When you sing the Psalms every day, something really happens in your ensemble that is there's a lot of synergy that happens. It's really, really profound. I think the most important reason that we go is because it affords us the opportunity to dive even deeper into the Anglican choral tradition. And by going on these trips, we get to live and breathe the spaces, the very spaces of the composers and the authors of the texts that we sing, the composers of the music and the authors of the text, where they lived and breathed in the very same spaces. When we were at St. Paul's, London, countless people, John Donne, and numerous composers, John Steiner and so forth. And one of the things I try to do on these tours, when I pick the music for what we're singing, I try to pick things that were written by composers that worked in those spaces. So when we were in Winchester, I keep saying that wrong. It is Winchester. They were very specific about that. It is Winchester, not Winchester, but Winchester, which seems backwards to me, because you would think Brits would say Winchester, but it's Winchester. Anyway, so Winchester Cathedral, some of the luminaries, musical luminaries that worked there, Samuel Sebastian Wesley, and we sang a piece of his, Thou Wilt Keep Me Perfect Peace. And then there were others who worked in Winchester, particularly Winchester College. We had Thomas Wilkes and George Dyson, and we sang music by them as well on the tour. In Windsor, we sang two pieces specifically by Windsor composers. One was Bring Us, O Lord God, by William H. Harris, Sir William H. Harris. I played a prelude by William H. Harris this morning before the 9 o'clock service, and I will again before the 11. And incidentally, that piece was also sung at the late Queen Elizabeth II's burial service in St. George's, Windsor. So it was really profound for us to be able to sing that in the very space that was sung. We also, for our closing evensong, sang a piece, a setting of Psalm 63, Thou God art praised in Zion, by Malcolm Boyle, who was an assistant organist of Witten's St. George's, Windsor. And so I've talked about all of the why, and I want our guest choir members in the dean's class today to talk a little bit about that more at the end, and indeed not just the end. I want to give you guys the floor for quite a long time. So really, this portion is going to be just show and tell. I want to take you through what we did And the first place we were in was Winchester Cathedral. Winchester is about roughly an hour to an hour and a half outside of London, southwest of London. And its history, Winchester, the town, was actually the first capital of England when it was still under Anglo-Saxon rule and governance. And Alfred the Great, there's a great statue in one of the squares, or it's really more of a rotary, but there's an Alfred the Great statue there, and it was during his time that Winchester was really prominent. And also one of the reasons that this very cathedral is so elaborate, because it was such a place of prominence. This building began in 1076, and before that, as I said, the town was the Anglo-Saxon capital. It has the longest nave of any medieval cathedral in the world, which is interesting because it's not an especially tall building. Especially when you walk up to it on the outside, you think, oh, this isn't as grand as I would think. It feels very kind of townsy, like a town cathedral. And then you walk in and you see this vast nave, and it just keeps going and going. This is the on the left, you see the facade of the building, and then you see the unadorned and unchaired nave inside. And here it is as it looks today, and you see all the banners and this great, wonderful west window, which is just absolutely spectacular. And it just blinds you during the day when you're inside. In fact, when you watch the live stream, I don't envy their video problems because there's so much light that comes in, and it's really blinding. You'll see it in some of the videos. They also have a very storied music program here. It is just astounding, and there has been a long history of wonderful musicians and directors who've been here. And of course, I mentioned Samuel Sebastian Wesley before. There's the beautiful reredos on the high altar there. I'm not a big fan of the altar hanging, but that's okay. This is the choir. Now, in England, this part of the building is what we might equate to our chancel here in our cathedral. But this choir is spelled Q-U-I-R-E, not C-H-O-I-R, to refer to the musical ensemble or body, but to a physical location, the choir, which is often enclosed by what's called a screen or a rood screen, which some cathedrals have done away with them. For instance, St. Paul's Cathedral in London used to have a screen, and now it doesn't. A lot of cathedrals have retained them. And it was a way of separating the nave from sort of the inner workings, so almost like a holy of holies in a sense. Not quite. Don't quote me on that. That's not really, I don't think, what they're getting after. But it was a way of separation from the congregation and the nave to what was happening up front. And of course, some people have gotten rid of them because there is that physical separation, right? And you can't help but feel that. But as you can see, it's very grand. It's very, very lovely. Now, interestingly, in both spaces, we had a very hard time singing because we were in a sort of acoustical vacuum in the choir. It really took us by surprise. Something about the wood carvings in both this space and St. George's Chapel really trapped the sound, and it really did feel like singing in a vacuum. It was very hard work. But when I walked around as the choir was singing during a rehearsal, I could hear the sounds just reverberating through the space. It was really, really wonderful. But we didn't get the benefits of that while we were singing until our very last service in Windsor, when we sang in front of the screen in the nave. A lot of church cathedrals and chapels in the UK will do that on Sundays to be closer to the people because they need more space. They can't just have everybody come and sit in the choir. So they'll have the choir out front, and they'll have an altar out there as well, or a table. That's when we finally got the reward of the resonance in the building. It was really, really wonderful. Slightly illegal photo of the choir. I will say, the choir knows that I took this very, very kind of in disguise, and I just stepped back and I just kind of looked like this, because they really are very, very strict about you not taking photos in these spaces. Winchester, not as much, But St. George's, we were really not allowed to. And the verger there, he told us that if anyone was caught taking photos, they would kick us out. So it was quite severe. So we didn't dare. Winchester Cathedral floods. And there are documents all around the depictions all around the town of flooding in Winchester and rivers running through the streets and all this. But the cathedral still does flood. And there was a famous diver at the beginning of the 20th century named William Walker, who actually helped to save the cathedral because the cathedral was sinking. And he dove around the cathedral underwater and shored up the perimeter of the cathedral and really saved it. But this is the crypt. It's one of the oldest crypts in any cathedral in England. It does flood from time to time. And there's this sculpture there, statue, if you will, entitled Sound Two by Sir Anthony Gormley. I can't read my own handwriting. Anthony Gormley. It's really profound. It's really, really wonderful. Also, St. Swithin is the patron saint of Winchester Cathedral, and the shrine is there. Was a pilgrimage site for a very, very long time. I want to come back to Winchester in a minute. I can't show you the live streams through the through this program called Keynote, but I'll have to exit out of it, and I will come back to it. One more tidbit about Winchester Cathedral. Jane Austen is buried there, and there's her grave there on the left. And then this wonderful photo looking through the screen opening to the rest of the nave just gives you a sense of the size and proportion of the building. And this is, of course, the choir in front of the high altar after our last evensong. And that was a really wonderful photo and a wonderful memory of that. In parallel, our not illegal picture, because the verger took this one, of our choir in front of the high altar at St. George's Chapel, Windsor. Now, Windsor Castle was founded by William the Conqueror around 1070, which is around the time that Winchester Cathedral was begun. And the castle itself was built in the 12th century under Henry I and the II. And the chapel was founded by Edward IV in 1475 and completed under the reign of Henry VIII. Both of whom are buried there, along with many, many other monarchs, including the late Queen Elizabeth II. It's also the spiritual home of the Order of the Garter, so it has all of these amazing carvings in the choir. You see all these banners hanging over the choir, the carvings, and then at the top of carvings, you see all these like figures. Right under the flags, they each represent a symbol of the knights that are in the Order of the Garter. And incidentally, my family and I went to Scotland after we were in Windsor, after the choir came home, and we were in Edinburgh, and we were in St. Giles Cathedral, which is the Presbyterian Cathedral in Edinburgh. And they have a very small chapel where they have their basically a Scottish equivalent of the Order of the Garter. It's much smaller, but they have a seat for the king as well, and the queen, the queen regent, is it queen regent? What is queen consort? Thank you, queen consort, next to her. So very interesting history. This was interesting. So the choir, I'll go back to the choir in a minute. You see on the right, remember Q-U-I-R-E, these are the stalls the choir sings in. It's the ones nearest the organ in the screen. And right in the middle is a plaque / vault. You can see it in the left picture from up above. And this is where the music stand that I conducted from was, right on top of this plaque. And I stood on top of this plaque. And it's hard to read because, again, these are kind of bootleg photos that someone took and put on the internet. His name is not Fred Teyardo, I assure you. In a vault beneath this marble slab are deposited the remains of Jane Seymour, Queen of King Henry VIII. King Henry VIII, King Charles I, and an infant child of Queen Anne. I was literally standing on the grave of Henry VIII as I was conducting the choir. I mean, the parallel of that is unreal. I mean, here we are, an American choir in the Episcopal Church, an off-branch of the Church of England, an offshoot. And here is Henry VIII, who holds some responsibility for the beginning of the Church of England. It really was remarkable, and I gave a little talk in our staff meeting a couple of weeks ago about this and mentioned that one of the hymns we sang for Matins, which is morning prayer, sung morning prayer, was the text was not a mighty fortress, but the tune was a mighty fortress. So to be standing on the grave of Henry VIII while hearing Martin Luther's great tune, I mean, it was just all coming together. It was really, really incredible. This is an interesting story. So meet Joe the Verger. We met Joe the Verger in St. Paul's Cathedral, London, 4 years ago. He was one of the Vergers on staff there and was very helpful to us during our time. And he had since moved on from St. Paul's, and I thought he was at St. Albans. And one of the choir members tipped me off the week of and said, hey, I think I heard that Joe is actually at St. George's Chapel now. So I reached out to him. We're Facebook friends. And I reached out to him, and I said, did you move recently? Because it wasn't even published on his profile. And he said, yep, I'm there, and I'm going to be there this weekend. See you there. And I think he had no idea that it was us that weekend or whatever. And so it was quite a surprise for the choir to meet Joe the Verger again. And so he took this selfie of us. He was the one who took the pictures of us to begin with. So, and then last but not least, we have... the resident cat, who absolutely owned the place. He walked around, pranced around, was very friendly, and totally owned the place. This is a great time for me to pass the microphone on to Holly, who will
speak to you guys. Thanks, good morning. I'm Holly Higginbotham. I have been in the choir here for, I think, 15 years, 16 years. And I was in a different Episcopal choir before coming to Birmingham, but I had never been on choir tour until Fred took us to St. Paul's in 2022. So that was the first choir tour for me. And then Evensong is my favorite service ever, especially Lessons and Carols at Christmas. Do you want me to keep speaking?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Please do, yeah. Yeah, or you can introduce David. Okay. David can introduce himself. Yeah. And you guys can come up on the source.
Morning, I'm David Flooding. And we have been members of the church about a decade now. And shortly after joining the church, we retired to the U.S. to be able to sing on my choir teacher at the state high school and the churches and all, but I have really just grown so much as a member of this choir, and what we do here is just, it's such a high level, and getting to worship is such a high level, it's really wonderful. But it's a real blessing to be able to be here and be a part of this and what we do and what we just did.
So Fred talked about why we go, and I'll tell you a little bit more about what it's like to be on choir tour and what impact that has. So when you go on choir tour, and I said I'd never been on a choir tour. I had been on choir tour in America a bunch of times, but not to England. So when you go to England and you're on choir tour, it is you are going to the source of the Anglican choral tradition. I tried to think of an analogy for that, and the only thing I could come up with is she coached Tuscaloosa T.O. football game. She put to the source. So you're going to the source, and as Fred said, it's so incredibly worshipful and sacred, and your spirit and the reason that you do this is just refreshed. I can't say it better than that. It just gives you so much inspiration to be in these spaces and to be able to sing this music. Fred mentioned that he links the composers at the cathedrals back to the music. He does an absolutely incredible job. And the people at the clergy and the people who work at the cathedrals recognize that and actually work it into their comments. During even song, they talk about how special a piece is or how special a composer is that we're singing in this space where that composer lived. And that is just refreshing for my soul and just brings me closer to God, brings me closer to these people that we have the privilege of doing this with.
There are two words that I think of when I think of the why, they both start with S. The first S is service, and Fred sort of alluded to this. Because these churches exist and they feel like it is very much their signature responsibility to keep worship going among everything else, that when their choirs leave, they have a gas, they have a hole in that. And we are going to serve other Christians in our global Christian community. That's what we're doing. And it is very special to get to do that. And they're very grateful that we are able to continue to elevate their worship that they do on a daily basis and feel like it is their signature responsibility to keep doing. And so I think of service not only because we're helping them worship, but because, like Fred said, you know, many of these cathedrals are, you know, flooded with tourists, and many people come to these churches with really no understanding of Christianity. It's a historical thing that they're going to see, right? They're supposed to go see these cathedrals when they go to England, and many of them think, well, we should do an Evensong, for that's an English thing. And I know I do think, and I pray before we go and went up there, that there's hopefully somebody there that is touched by the Lord in this, and that they go from there. We'll never know. We'll never know what seeds maybe we planted, what something that occurred that sparked something spiritual in them that hopefully, you know, brings them to Jesus. The second word with the starts with S is sabbatical, because I think of this almost like a car sabbatical. You know, we had our clergy that spend time on sabbatical every so often, and they go, and it's not a vacation. It's something that is for spiritual renewal. It is for growth, development, learning, all of that. And our choir, you know, obviously the people who are in this choir devote a lot of time to this ministry every week, many hours every week between rehearsals and being here on Sunday morning, and we love it. We love being a part of this ministry. But it's something to be able to kind of go out of the normal for a little bit and go somewhere special like that and be in an intense, you know, situation with each other and everything that's going on, but also get into focus and learn. I think of it kind of like a sabbatical, and I think it's worth investing in that kind of thing. And I'm very grateful to all of you who over time have supported our fundraising, that have, and in the church, hopefully supporting our fundraising going forward, because it's not cheap to do this, and we couldn't do it if we were all paying our own way 100%. We do know, you know, as individuals when we go. But it is something, the service and the sabbatical is something that you all invest in, and I'm thankful for that.
I want to talk a little bit, too, about how going on these trips make us better singers, and that allows us to bring better worship back. So we learn our notes here. We spend a lot of time. We rehearse during the summer before we go on tour. And then you get to be clipped and you get to find out, okay, well, can I do this? Can I rehearse this in a dungeon? Can I prepare this music in a dungeon and then go out and sing this in this chapel? Can I sing this and hear a 7-second echo? And listen for that and adjust and listen to the other choristers around and adjust to that. Can I sing this when it's 90 degrees outside and I'm wearing 2 more layers of robes? So it really is, it can be very intense. It's completely worth it, absolutely. And then you come home having done this intensive study and we're able to just, you know, aim higher. We're able to bring the best and the highest back because we've been the best and the highest that there is. Something that struck me on this tour in particular was the way that the cathedral in Winchester and then the chapel at St. George's were so intentionally built. When we went to St. Paul's in 2022, you see St. Paul's, it's incredible. It's surrounded by the rest of London. You don't really see it kind of rising up on the horizon. But in Winchester and at St. George's, these are centers of the community. These are not afterthoughts. These were built as these incredible monuments to the glory of God. And to just go in and feel the weight of singing in there and realize that God has always been meant to be central to our lives. It's a recentering of God for me. It's a recentering of spirituality.
Well, I hope what I'm about to say is bordering on being a little prideful, but you know, you heard Reverend Palmer, the dean of the Cathedral of Winchester. You know, he introduced us and said, you know, our choir and our church by name, where we were from, to an audience that's global, from around the world. And I do think it is an opportunity for us to represent who we are as a church. And hopefully some people kind of notice that, or maybe do an investigation of they see more of our diaspora center, you know, faith and all that, and that is a benefit. But I will say too that I always wonder when we're there, because these, as Fred said, they have a tremendous music program, and most of these cathedrals have essentially professional choirs and foresters. And when they go, I kind of wonder, well, how we do it prepared? Yes, in a normal course. And I will say, you know, so on Friday, Brooke and I moved our son Hollis into his freshman year at Alabama. And Brooke had to leave yesterday morning to go on business trips. So I'm badging it this weekend. And what does one do when you had all this free time? But you go back and you pull up a lot of Winchester YouTubes and watch these services. I mean, wouldn't you? So, but I did it intentionally because I was kind of curious, you know, how all is it the summer is visitor choirs, right? There are lots of different visitor choirs coming and going. And I just had to watch Echo Desert or something to sort of see, you know, how we're doing, man. Again, not to be prideful, but I want to say, Esmond, you were very well represented by this choir. And that's thanks to Fred and his leadership, and that to this church, we're valuing that. We did very well compared to so many. And I would say that we represented the order well, and you know, we did with ours first. So,
and the singers. We say it.
The last thing I want to say is Fred does a tremendous job of networking with everybody who is part of being a Bicoral tradition. And that, again, helps us because we can feel more connected to that world and they feel connected to us. We talk back and forth. You know, we talk about visiting each other. So kudos to Fred for all the incredible work that he does that allows us to continue doing this.
Now, Kate, it's good to say every I guess student of Inchbury to close them so we can all get our robes on, Groovy. There, I already thank the church for supporting these. There were a lot of individuals put a lot of work into planning these very difficult trips. And now, even some people aren't even on the trip, people like Lynn O'Neill back there and others. And I have made a mistake, but I should name everybody and not be able to, but people that really did a lot of work to organize this. Something that's very complex and complicated when you're trying to move all these people around another countries.
Hi, where guys do all our flights.
Our flights and these men.
I mean, Lucy.
Lucy, yeah, we're Lucy. Yes. She wore out all the money, imagine that. Mary, Bella, and all you. And
Sarah, me, and Rusty as well. This thing. So, thank you guys. I think it's such a testament to what we're doing from you all rather than me. And I just want to say thank you to all the Margaret members who are leaving right now. But indeed to all the fire members, because we can't do what we do without you guys. I mean, you were the voices. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's in prime, you were the ones who were doing the singing. So I'm really, really grateful to all the dedication and hard work. And these guys worked very, very hard. I know we don't dwell at births in this church and in the preacher race, but there is a lot of hard work that goes into what they do. I can't ignore that. Very grateful for their constant dedication and commitment. So,
thank you all. Thank you all.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you'll join us for one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.